Well, what's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. Let's hear from our fearless leader.
And I wonder, what is your message to Hezbollah and its backer, Iran?
Don't.
I'm sure you know that Iran attacked Israel over the weekend. I'm one of those that thought that we were about to be in a full-blown war. Of course, I didn't have the entire story, like the fact that there was plenty of warning given, and the fact that apparently we just have all of the capability to knock all these things out of the sky. I'll be honest with you, pretty cool to see, you know, 200-300 drones and missiles and rockets go up, and I think 99% of them got shot down. There was a little bit of damage that happened, but not a ton. As far as we know, as far as all the information that we have, and I'm sure that that's all correct, but that happened. I do have this story here that I want to go into about how all the sides kind of gain from this, and I want to tell you what I hope happens after this, but what's more than likely going to happen after this. We'll find out, I'm sure. You know, we don't have to play the videos with the sirens and all that, but we definitely saw a lot of videos of missile and drone intercepts happening over the skies. A pretty crazy thing. You know, I don't remember watching the hundreds of things launched at one of our allies and everyone working together to try to shoot it all down. So that was one of the first times I've seen something like that. The story from the AP goes into how everyone benefited from this. Now, I kind of disagree with what they had to say because I don't think Iran really benefited from this. If I was Iran, I'd be a little bit embarrassed. But they are the ones that gave all the warning, which is a weird fact as well. Like, they seem to be working pretty hard to make sure that this doesn't actually escalate. Like any political, like any government, they had to retaliate. They had to respond, I guess, to seven of their people getting killed. They had to do something, but they gave plenty of warning that this was going to happen. So much warning that our planes, Israel's planes, were already up there in the air. We knew to be looking for it, and everyone was ready to shoot it down. I do wonder what would happen if there wasn't any warning and everyone was not ready for when these things were about to come across, how different that would have been. And hopefully, we don't actually find out. In this piece from the AP, they say Israel's response could restore faith in its military. After more than 300 drones and missiles headed towards Israel in the early hours of Sunday, the country was able to successfully put to the test its aerial defense array, which, along with help from allies, blocked 99% of the projectiles and prevented any major damage. By contrast, Israel's military had suffered a bruising defeat at the hands of a far less equipped enemy when Hamas stormed from Gaza into Israel on October 7th. That was a major blow to Israel's image as a regional military powerhouse and shattered any sense of invincibility. The response to Iran's attack could be what restores faith in the country's military, even as its forces are bogged down in Gaza more than 6 months after the war began. Israel's also boasted about the coalition of forces that helped it repel the Iranian assault. It's a much-needed show of support at a time when Israel is at its most isolated because of concerns surrounding its conduct during the war against Hamas. They say it's also a win for Iran because Iran showed its might. I agree a little bit less with this one, with the whole Iran showing its might thing. They did send a lot of things over, but they didn't really do any damage. And I'm not sure that that's going to be perceived as a win in their country, unless, of course, they're showing people in their country a very different version of the events from the version of events that we've seen from our news. But they say Iran vowed repeatedly it would respond to an apparent Israeli strike on an Iranian diplomatic compound in Damascus that killed two generals. Sunday's assault allowed Iran to show to its citizens that it won't stand by when its assets are attacked and that it was serious when it threatened revenge. With its strike, Iran was able to exhibit its fierce firepower, instill fear in some Israelis, and disrupt the lives of many through school cancellations. But with little damage actually caused in Israel, Iran might hope that any response will be measured. Several hours after it launched the drones and missiles, Iran said the operation was over. Once again, it kind of sounds like they felt like they had to do this. They had to respond to what Israel did, hitting their consulate and killing seven other people, including two of their generals. Apparently, one of the generals was also instrumental in the attack on October 7th. And so that's one of the main reasons they were going after that person. but they had to do something. They did something, and now they say that the operation is over. They don't want it to go further. One of the great things about this, you know, people look at money as a bad thing, but it would be really bad financially for Iran to push this into an all-out war. You're talking sanctions, trade embargo. You're talking all kinds of stuff that would hurt them financially. And what they're deciding is, actually, it's better for us to maintain some type of peace so we can keep selling our oil on the markets. It would be really bad for us if this happened. The United States, I guess, got a win also. The U.S. was a key player in repelling the assault, demonstrating to its allies around the world the power and reliability of American support. Now, as Israel mulls how and whether to respond, that alliance will be put to the test, with the Biden administration seeking to exert its leverage on Israel and prevent it from carrying out a response that might worsen the conflict. That is the next thing that we'll talk about after this piece. They also say that Hamas might benefit. So this is a win-win-win-win missile strike. But we don't get a whole lot of those, right? But apparently that's what this was. Hamas, which is backed by Iran, welcomed the strike. Since launching its October 7th attack, Hamas had hoped that regional partners might come to its assistance and drag Israel into a broader war. While some have done, including the Iranian-backed Hezbollah in Lebanon and Yemen's Houthis, Iran had not directly entered the fray until Sunday. Hamas could hope that the attack is the first salvo in deeper Iranian engagement than the war in Gaza. It also could hope that violence in the West Bank, where an Israeli team was killed in settlers' rampage in Palestinian towns, continues to heat up. At the very least, Iran's attack may have emboldened Hamas to dig in its heels in current negotiations over a ceasefire, hoping the increased military pressure on Israel might lead it to accept the militant group's harder line terms for a deal. So, like I said, win-win, win-win for everyone. The question now, is Israel going to do something in retaliation for this? As Charlie's the co-host, by the way, if you've never listened before, he's not here right now. Here's a picture of what his chair looks like. It's just an empty chair right there. As Charlie and I are fond of saying, there's always retaliations, and then there's a retaliation for the retaliation. Like, you could say, well, Israel has to hit Iran right now. Look at what they just did over the weekend. You could say, well, Iran needed to hit Israel. Look at what happened. Israel just bombed their consulate and killed 7 other people. Or you could say Israel had to hit those people because look at all of the Iranian-backed militias and look at how these people helped with October 7th. Or you could say those people need to do that because, I don't know, Israel's war in 70, whatever. And you could just keep tracing it all the way back to the time that Israel became a country, and then that's where everyone's really mad about it. I honestly don't know if this violence is ever going to stop because people are just clearly not happy that Israel is there. So I don't have any personal hopes of just having peace in this region and not always having things like this going on. The question now is Israel going to de-escalate or are they going to retaliate? If I could talk to Israel right now, okay, let's just call it even, okay? They actually gave you the ability to show the world that you could defend an attack where hundreds of more advanced missiles and drones were sent at you and you were able to shoot down almost all of them. Like, that's pretty cool, right? See the videos online? That's pretty cool. Who's going to mess with you? Iran just launched hundreds of things at you and you shot down almost all of them. This is a win. And this is after you took out 7 of their people at a consulate in a place where you're not really supposed to bomb those kinds of places. And this is the retaliation. Okay. I think a 7-year-old girl got critically, got injured, head trauma, something like that. There was some damage to a base. And other than that, why don't we just call it good? Some answers to that could be pretty bad. Maybe they want a wider war. Maybe Israel wants a wider war. Do they want to drag America into a wider war with them? It's possible. It really is possible. But I think they need to call it good and not do anything after this. If they do anything after this, it means that they do actually want a war with Iran and they want to drag us into it. That is my opinion on the matter. They need to not do that. Okay, they already went. I think many people could agree they've gone a little bit too far with this whole killing everyone in Gaza thing. You know, maybe a little too far with that. And they could have done more targeted strikes and spent more time going after those people and saving more hostages, but instead, you know, just kind of went with the carpet bomb route. You know, different strokes for different folks. You know, it's not on me to run their foreign policy for them. I don't want to be involved in the war, and I'm old, okay? I'm too old for the draft, so that's fine, but I don't think that we want to be in a war with Iran. It would be very different from the other wars that we've had. Would we win it? Sure, we'd win it. But they're way more advanced than the other people that we've had the fight against in the past, at least in my lifetime, anyway. It would not be good. And then what is the actual outcome of that? Where's your bright side there? We don't want the actual war with Iran. It's just not a good idea. So I hope that Biden also says don't to Netanyahu right now when he's talking about retaliating for this. I know that they're meeting and trying to decide what they're going to do. They haven't decided yet. Potentially could come pretty soon, like today or tomorrow, if they are going to respond. So we might see by the next episode, maybe by tomorrow, we'll know what's going to happen. The other thing, you know, I saw a couple people posting about what Trump said to Iran at one point in time. I actually think, I know as a libertarian, I'm against war. I still think that having a leader, oh man, I hate talking about Trump positively, but I do want to give an example here. I think having a leader that people believe could be crazy or is just potentially cool with doing whatever to make himself look good. Let's just assume it's a narcissistic reason. Okay, let's not even say it's to protect the American people or interests or whatever, but to make himself look good. I do think that it's a good thing to have a leader who projects strength to potentially foreign adversaries. So like when he said, never, ever threaten the United States again, or you have to understand this is in all caps. Okay, so it's very important, very forceful. All caps. Never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. I, for some reason, happen to think that things like that are okay. Maybe the all caps is a little bit too far. Let's all agree all caps is too much. But I think there's no cap in this statement right here, and I think everyone believed him also. Everyone noticed that we didn't really have a lot of this stuff going on. Sure, we had our wars that we were already doing. You know, we've always got wars that we're already doing. But it's not like Russia attacked Ukraine while Trump was president, which is weird considering that Trump was a Putin plant. You think he would have attacked Ukraine while Trump was president. I don't know. That one's weird. Maybe the timing was off. They thought he was going to win a second term, something like that. You didn't have Iran launching all these missiles at Israel. You didn't have October 7th happen. Maybe having a guy that people think is crazy enough to do anything is actually valuable on the world stage. We'll move on to what's going to affect us immediately in the fact that House Speaker Mike Johnson says he's going to push for aid to Israel and Ukraine this week. So he's turned around on this one, been holding back on that bill. But you might as well not let a good crisis go to waste. You know, he's fresh off of flip-flopping on FISA, which, by the way, the warrant amendment did not pass with FISA. I wish I would have been wrong about that one, but I believe he cast a tie-breaking vote. It was 212 to 212, and he was the tiebreaker on it. But now we're going to make sure we can send aid to Israel and Ukraine. And why not do that while everyone is talking about Israel getting attacked by Iran? And so now we need to make sure we send them a bunch of money because we all know that Israel's major problem has been that they don't have any money. And who does have a lot of money? The United States, apparently. I guess that's what that means. House Speaker Mike Johnson said Sunday he will try to advance wartime aid for Israel this week as he attempts the difficult task of winning House approval for a national security package that also includes funding for Ukraine and allies in Asia. The Republican speaker has sat for 2 months on a $95 billion supplemental package that would send support to the U.S. allies, as well as provide humanitarian aid for civilians in Ukraine and Gaza, and funding to replenish U.S. weapons provided to Taiwan. The attack by Iran on Israel early Sunday further ratcheted up the pressure on Johnson, but also gave him an opportunity to underscore the urgency of approval for the funding. The opportunity, the crisis, and the opportunity. Johnson told Fox News Sunday Morning Futures that he and Republicans understand the necessity of standing with Israel, and he would try this week to advance the aid. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer at a news conference also said that Joe Biden held a phone call Sunday with top Republicans and Democrats in the House and Senate, including Johnson. Schumer said there was consensus among all the leaders that we had to help Israel and help Ukraine, and now hopefully we can work that out and get this done next week. It's vital for the future of Ukraine, for Israel, and the West, Schumer said. So as we know, we get the strike against Israel over the weekend, and now all of a sudden there is renewed urgency for passing this bill, potentially the $95 billion bill, maybe the smaller one that just has Ukraine and Israel included in it. But it's going to be in the billions, maybe $75 billion, maybe $95 billion. I don't know. Maybe they take the opportunity and make it even more. We'll see what happens this week. Let's talk about taxes. I'm no foreign policy expert, but I just wanted to talk about what happened over the weekend. I truly hope it doesn't escalate. And I, you know, no matter what your thoughts on the war in Gaza and all that, you know, it's good that all of those things were shot down. Like that, that's a good thing. It was cool to see that done, and you didn't want to see hundreds of rockets and drones landing in Israel. Hopefully, no matter what side of the Israel-Gaza conflict you come down on. So those are my thoughts on that. It's currently April 15th, and we'd be a terrible libertarian podcast if we didn't talk about taxation and the fact that taxation is theft. We're not going to do the normal taxation and theft episode. I'm sure most of you know our views on this. You earn money justly, voluntarily in our economy. You trade what you have that is valuable. Maybe it's a product. Maybe it's a service. Maybe it's your labor. You earn compensation for that. You spend your time doing whatever that is, your limited amount of time, your fixed amount of time that you have on this planet as a human being. You spend your time creating that value, and then the U.S. government just comes in and takes basically whatever portion of that they deem necessary for whatever it is they want to do. Maybe it's housing and urban development. Maybe it's shooting down missiles in the sky over Israel. So taxation is theft, the bottom line. I wanted to talk about the current state of taxation and where the American people are when it comes to taxation. We're going to cover it from that angle because I've seen some interesting polls lately. Just as a little state of the union right now, a 2023 fiscal year, we spent $6.13 trillion, 23% of our GDP, which was $26 trillion. So we spent 23% of GDP in fiscal year 2023. That has gone up a lot. We'll talk about it. Okay. But that's a bunch. We got that big COVID bump. The economy got that big COVID bump, if you know what I'm talking about. And why come back? Why go back to the way things used to be when we can spend so much more money now? I don't know. I don't want to do it either, guys. Let's just keep spending money. But I saw some polls, and at first I was like, well, this could be like a white pill moment right here. Look at this. Americans are unhappy with taxation. That's a good thing. They should be unhappy with taxation. It turns out they are. They're almost there. We're almost right. More and more Americans hate taxes, and they especially hate federal income taxes. So maybe the good news there is that we're on the right path, except for the fact that those people just think that it should be coming from rich people instead of them, unfortunately. Americans' views on federal income taxes have worsened. 6 in 10 Americans say the amount of federal income tax they pay is too high, a level last seen in 2001. 46% believe the income tax they pay is fair, which ties 1999's level. 51% say their income taxes are not fair. So now more Americans say that their income taxes are not fair compared with the people who say that it's fair. And of course, this is a group of people that they surveyed. You guys know how surveys work. They didn't ask 300 million people how they felt about it or whatever. They asked 2,000 people. More Americans say federal income tax is the worst or the least fair tax, just edging out the local property tax. So this is some of those things in chart form from Gallup right now. This is Americans' opinions on federal income taxes they pay. By the way, if you're listening right now, this is going to be uploaded to YouTube immediately. I'm actually currently streaming to YouTube, only I have it set to private, so I'm just going to switch it to public afterwards. So this video will already be here, so you can see the charts and the graphs that I'm going through, and that'll probably help as you're watching. So 60% of Americans believe that the federal income tax they pay is too high. 36% of Americans believe that it's about right. And 3% say that their federal income tax is too low. Luckily, there's an easy solution for that. Just send in more money. Problem solved. Tax fairness, as we just said, 51% of the people say it's not fair. 46% of the people say that it is fair. Okay. It would be good. This news could be good, except for what people actually want to do about the whole thing. We'll get to that here in a second. Now, what's the worst tax? In 2023, 34% of these same respondents said that the federal income tax is the worst tax. Local property tax was the next one, 29%, saying that that was the worst tax. State income taxes was the next at 14%, state sales tax at 12%, and federal social security tax at 10%. After that, we need to bump that number up for sure, along with the state income tax, and maybe less people be upset about the state sales tax. I don't know. I always feel great, and I always feel the need to post a screenshot, although I didn't this time around. I did my taxes over the weekend. And it's always great when you get to that portion of the website. We use Free Tax USA. Elizabeth Warren hasn't provided me with that free tax website yet. So I just use a free tax website, one that already exists that we don't have to spend billions of dollars to make, but whatever. We get to the state tax portion, and it asks you what state you live in. And I put Tennessee. And it's like, well, did you earn income outside of Tennessee? Did you live outside of Tennessee anytime during this year? And I'm like, no. And it says, okay, you don't owe any taxes. That's always pretty cool. The trade-off on that is that we have a 9.5% sales tax here in Davidson County, Metro Nashville area where I live. And that's a pretty high sales tax. Good news is when I go to visit my family in Illinois, I can just buy big items up there in Illinois at a 6.5% sales tax. And then I come back home to Tennessee where I don't pay any income tax and can save you a little bit of money. Okay. That's just a little life hack for you guys. Coming right up, we're going to talk more about taxes, gun rights, and dumb leap of the week.
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster, holy stink.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Liberty Unite with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. We've been going through Americans' views on taxes. Is it good news? Is it bad news? I don't know. Let's go through some more polls. Let's see. From a UChicago Harris AP NORC poll, among U.S. adults, less than a quarter believe they receive valuable services from paying local property tax, state sales tax, or federal income tax. Less than a quarter of these respondents on this poll believe that they receive valuable services from paying these taxes. So they think their taxes are too high. They think that they don't receive valuable services from these taxes. I think it's time to make the argument that taxation is theft and we need to get rid of taxes, right? That's what I hear. Nearly two-thirds say local property tax, federal income tax, or state sales taxes are too high. Republicans are more likely than Democrats to say local property taxes or federal income taxes are unfair. Makes sense. Kind of tracks, right? Sounds right to me. Here's where the next polls start to worry me, because we see that people think taxes are unfair. They think they're paying too much in taxes. They think that they're not getting the value from their taxes for what they're paying. And then you poll a bunch of people last month. Now, these are 5,000 registered voters in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. So swing states, another way to say that. Please indicate if you support or oppose the following tax policies. Raise taxes on billionaires. 70% of the respondents, a little more than 70% of the respondents, support, strongly support, or somewhat support raising taxes on billionaires. Another like 10% say they don't know or don't have an opinion, and only about 20% say that they somewhat or strongly oppose this idea. Raise taxes on those making $400,000 plus. If you can believe this, this number is actually higher. So instead of 70, it's like 72% think that you should raise taxes on those making more than $400,000. Cut individual tax rates across income groups. About 68% say that we should cut individual tax rates across all the income groups at the same time. 50% of the respondents say that we should raise the corporate tax rate. 50% of the respondents say that we should put 60% tariffs on Chinese imports. And 50% of the respondents say that we should do a universal 10% tariff on all imports. And about 100% of these people are dumb AF. So let's go through a couple of these things. No, you know what? I'll just tell you something for all six of them immediately. Doing any of these things would make your standard of living worse. It would raise the prices of all of your goods and all of your services if you do any of those things. Raising taxes on billionaires specifically might actually decrease investment in the United States, might actually stop people from becoming billionaires or decrease incentives or cause people to move elsewhere. If you think being a billionaire is a bad thing, that might sound good to you. But when I hear about a billionaire, you know what I think? What did they do to be worth $1 billion? Most of the time, when you look at the person who's worth $1 billion, they created something that added a lot of value to millions or billions of people's lives. And so I don't think being a billionaire is a bad thing. What you tax, you get less of. I don't want to raise taxes on billionaires. If you're going to raise taxes on those making $400,000 plus and cut individual tax rates across income groups, which is almost the same number, very interesting, raising corporate tax rates. Corporations don't pay taxes. Their customers pay taxes. Taxes are just an expense, like shipping, like materials, taxes. They're just expenses on the business. And then they charge a profit on top of that, whatever percentage it is that they're trying to get. 60% tariff on Chinese imports would raise prices drastically for a lot of people who are buying things. Universal 10% tariff on imports would raise prices for all of our goods and services as well. These are terrible ideas. Please indicate if you support or oppose. Okay, so this is specifically who supported or opposed raising taxes on billionaires. Liberals, or people on the left, or Democrats, because the word liberal means something different these days, 85% of those people supported raising taxes on billionaires. Okay, you might be like, okay, yeah, that sounds about right. Also, almost 60% of Republicans supported raising taxes on billionaires as well. It's one of the few things that's bipartisan, and I say this every time as well, and I say it every time that we talk about it. One of our very first episodes, back when we were a show called The Big Freedom Show, one of the very first things I ever talked about on this podcast was that the danger I saw lurking ahead was that the only thing the left and the right could agree on was that they hated rich people. It was one of our very first episodes, one of the very first things I ever talked about over 1,200 episodes ago, was that I saw that the left and the right both hated rich people. And that is still true right now. Let's move on just a little bit more, okay? As tax day approaches, the vast majority of Americans blame the rich for the taxes they pay. Not poor Americans. Let's see. Overall, rich Americans and big corporations who pay less than their fair share. So you're saying, who do you blame for the tax that you have to pay? Now, you might think that you'd blame the federal government because they tax you. Or you might say, well, how about the fact that they spend so much more money than they take in and they never decrease their spending, unless, of course, you're coming from like the biggest spending year ever in human history for anyone. Then you say you decrease spending a little bit after that. You might blame them. for the taxes that you pay, but no, it's actually rich Americans and big corporations paying less than their fair share. 86% of Democrats said that. 55% of Republicans blame rich Americans and big corporations paying less than their fair share. That's interesting. So let's talk about the billionaires for a minute. As of April 1st of 2024, according to Americans for Tax Fairness, the wealth of the billionaires in the United States was $5.8 trillion. It's a lot of money. I'm not going to argue that that's not a lot of money. In 2017, by the way, that number was $2.9 trillion. If I could try and do some quick math on that, that is roughly double. And so this is one of the reasons that you might blame these billionaires somehow. If you blame them, it's because some people have been lying to you about a lot of things, but whatever. $5.8 trillion. A really interesting fact about that that we started with is that in 2023, we spent $6.13 trillion. The wealth of all of the billionaires, as of 2 weeks ago, is $5.8 trillion, less than the total amount that the U.S. government spends in 1 year. So as you know, what I can say after this, what people would normally say after this, you could take all of their money, 100% of it, and it would not even fund the U.S. government for 1 year. You know what would actually happen if you took all of their money? Our spending would go up. Maybe not the full 5.9 or 5.8 trillion dollars, but our spending would just go up and you would actually fund way less. You know what else would happen? Our entire economy would crash because those people are billionaires for a reason. And you would actually just have to seize everyone's retirements. So what I don't understand is where people think they're going to get this money when they talk about taxing the billionaires. First off, the billionaires are billionaires because they have a piece of paper that says they own a share of a stock in a company. That company is worth that amount of money because millions of people have invested their retirements into that company. And not just retirements, other people that are investors as well, but a lot of people have retirements, pensions, 401ks, IRAs, stuff like that. Where do they think the money is actually going to come from? It would destroy the entire economy if you did that kind of thing. Well, maybe they want to do that. Maybe they just want to tax like 10% of it. Nate, no one's saying you should take all the wealth of all the billionaires. Okay. We're going to take 10% of it? That's great. How much money is that? Someone give me a number crunch. What's that going to float us for, like 3 weeks? A month? Maybe a month? It could float us for that amount of time? I don't know. And then what? You still destroyed the economy at that time, by the way, because people had to sell all their shares in the companies to even be able to give you that money. The point of the matter is, people are blaming billionaires, but that's not where the problem is. The problem is that the government keeps spending money and they keep spending more money than they take in. They can't simply, you got to simply do one thing. You got to spend less money than you take in. All right, let's go through some more of this stuff. Because remember, people blame rich people. They are upset with taxes. They think they pay too much in taxes. They're not getting the value that they even pay from their taxes. And who do they blame for the taxes that they pay, the amount that they pay? They blame rich people. What about average federal tax rates by income group? This is from the Congressional Budget Office. Now, this is as of 2019. Maybe this has just drastically changed since 2019. The lowest quintile of income earners, their average federal tax rate was 0.5%. Okay. The next quintile up was about 9%. The middle quintile was about 13%. The fourth quintile was at about 17%. And then the top 1% is a little bit over 25%. We'll go over these numbers a little bit more. Don't worry, you don't have to write them down. I'm going to say them again, okay? People in the top 1%, on average, per person in the top 1%, pay $653,000 in taxes a year. It's a lot. The average for all taxpayers is $14,279. The bottom 50% of people, on average, $667. That they pay in taxes. Once again, your top 1%, the average tax rate is 25.9%. And this is not taking into account all of the earned income credits and stuff like that, because it's showing the bottom 50% at 3.3%. And that actually gets closer to zero or goes negative some years. Okay. Here's another interesting thing. People will come to you with this idea that taxes are just going up on the middle class and on the poor people. These rich people, they're paying less taxes. And that's because, you know, coming out of the 50s when everything was right with the world. We had these really high tax rates, and they decided they were going to raise taxes on the poor people and decrease taxes on the rich people. And that's how we got to the point that we're at right now. Well, starting in 1979, the lowest quintile's average federal tax rate was at about 9%. And up to 2019, that number has decreased from 9% down to the 0.5% that we talked about earlier. In 1979, for the top 1%, that was at 35% average federal tax rate, and it's down to about 30%-ish in 2019. In fact, for all of them, the number has gone down. Is that a good thing? Maybe that sounds like a good thing. The average federal tax rate has actually gone down since 1979 for almost everyone. It's back up from some of its lows and everything like that, but it's not the case that the poor are getting taxed more, that your firefighters and your teachers, they're paying a higher average tax rate than the people in the top 1%. And this is just not right, and we got to do something about it. It's not right. Like, there's data on it. There's numbers. We have numbers on this. Okay. Now, what about fair share? What is your fair share? It's a good question. Good question. The bottom 50%. They pay, the bottom 50% of income earners in the United States, they pay 2.5% of all of the income taxes. Now, this chart is just from 2001 to 2021. That has actually decreased from 2001 to 2021. They were paying about 5%, and that has decreased down to 2.5%. Where did they make up the ground? Was it the middle class, potentially? I don't know, what about 25 to 50? No, that's decreased from 13 down to about 8 as a share of the total amount of taxes. What about the 1 to 5%? What about the top 1%? They were at about 33% in 2001, and now it's up around 46% share of total taxes. When you group people together and you say the top quintile, or you say that, you could say the top 20%, you could say the top 50%, they pay almost all of the taxes. That's the point. And so while I look at a survey and it says Americans are unhappy with taxes, when I read that, I'm like, yeah, that's good. We've got them right where we want them, libertarians. We can do it. What you actually start to find out is they're not unhappy with taxation itself. A lot of people have been told that they're getting hosed. And unfortunately, the misinformation or the disinformation that's out there is that they're getting hosed by the rich and that the rich aren't paying their fair share. Well, that's just not true. The rich are definitely paying their fair share. Look at this. Top 50%, 97.7% of all taxes. 97.7%. The top 25%, it just goes down to 89% of all taxes. And it's about 46% if you're in the top 1%. People have been lied to about this, and they consistently get told that rich people are paying lower tax rates than a teacher or a firefighter. How many times have you heard this? Now, they had to invent new numbers to tell people these things. The true tax. When they look at someone's increases in their capital gains, their unrealized capital gains increases, and invent a new tax that taxes unrealized capital gains. That way you can consider that income for someone, and then you create something called their true tax, and then everyone goes out there and parrots these lines that actually people are paying lower rates than teachers and firefighters are. It's not the case. We have all the data on this, all the data. If you're unhappy with the taxes you're paying and you don't think you're getting the value for your money, your enemy is the government, not people who are hyper-productive in our society, not people who have created things that millions of people have found valuable. The blame has been taken off of the people that should be blamed. It's the people that are spending and wasting all of this money and cannot live within their means. And now some of that goes back to the people. In fact, a lot of that blame goes back to the people because to paraphrase Milton Friedman. The American people told the government, we want you to spend more money on us, but we don't want you to raise our taxes. And the government listened. They spend more money, but they've been very reluctant to raise people's taxes. So what do? They print money and they borrow money, but they keep spending more money. And it's the American people that keep telling them to do this, because anytime you take away a federal program, or God forbid you talk about not increasing that federal program, the whole world falls apart. It's all over at that point. So maybe this does come back to the American people just being flat out wrong on this thing. Tax Foundation put out this survey saying that tax literacy is low among U.S. taxpayers. They don't exactly understand how a progressive tax system and how marginal taxes work anyway. Suppose your income places you in the 22% bracket. How much of your income do you think is taxed at a rate of 22%? Let me see. 52% of the people responded saying all of it, or they're not sure. But 48% did say just some of it. You know, I did frame it the other way. Okay. What tax rate applies to the top U.S. federal income tax bracket? A lot of people got that right. Okay. And then when you ask, how much do you think the top 1% of taxpayers by income account in terms, what's their share of the total taxes? Only 22% of the people actually got that question correct. The largest portion said that they contributed 12% of the total taxes. That's a quarter of the respondents said that the top 1% contributed 12% of the total taxes. The number is actually 46 right now. So they were just off by, you know, a factor of four, but whatever. The other thing you'll hear before we round this out, I know it's a lot of data, a lot of charts, a lot of graphs. I enjoy looking at all these things. It's kind of fun. The thing you'll hear is that we had it right in the 1950s, and everything that's happened since then, that's just because we screwed up. We lowered taxes. Those rich people, they were paying 70, 90%. We had a 90% tax rate for the rich people in the 1950s. And that's why things were so good. I will immediately just show you the graph that says in the 1950s, the top 1% of U.S. households paid an average tax rate of 42%, even though the top marginal tax rate was 90%. Why is that? First off, that top tax rate was on income over $400,000 in 1950s money, which basically no one made, almost no one. That's over $4 million a year in today's money. There might be more people that qualify for that right now, but it's still not a lot. And even then, it was 90% of the money over $400,000, because that's how marginal taxes work. As of this chart right here, they were showing that the average tax rate was 36% for the top 1% of households. I think that's down to 30 or 31 right now. But they never paid 90%. That was not how much money we were taking from people. But people will still use this as an example. In fact, in the 1950s, taxes were higher, but for everyone. They were higher for the poor and the middle class also, which is your biggest base of money. Taxes were higher for those people in the 1950s, and they've come down since then. Maybe that's where the problem is. Or maybe it's the fact that we went off the gold standard, we started printing trillions and trillions of dollars and spending way more money than we took in, and this is all just correlation and causation. I don't know. People will say, well, we're just not taxing people enough. Well, we're still taking in about the same amount that we've always taken in as a percentage of our gross domestic product. All the goods and services that we produce, the productivity of our country, of all the people, we put it together into this thing. We call it gross domestic product. And this is the value that we create. Some of that is contributed by the government, either creating money out of thin air or taxing you and then putting it back into the economy. And they still call it gross domestic product. Kind of annoying that that gets counted in the number, but it's not a massive portion, but it is a portion. We're in the 16s right now for how much of our gross domestic product, how much of our productivity in the United States is the government taking from us? and then deciding that they know how to spend it better. We are right in range with where we were within the 50s. Actually, we are right where we were in the 50s for how much we're taking in taxes. What's actually changed is how much of our productivity is getting spent. And instead of 16, which is what we're taking in right now, we're spending 19 of the productivity back out in the economy. That's at, I said 19. It's actually 22, 23% is what's getting put back out there. The problem is the spending. If you're mad about taxes, you don't want to blame the billionaires. You want to blame the people that are taking the money from you without your permission and then using it on God knows what. Tons of waste, fraud, and abuse. And you watched a lot of it blow up over the skies in Israel. In fact, you've been watching a lot of it blow up over the skies in Israel over the last 6 months and probably throughout your lifetime. A lot of it's going to the military. A lot of it's going to Social Security now. A lot of it's going to Medicare. And then some of our other hundreds and hundreds to maybe 1,000 departments, depending on the ones that we don't know about. That's where the problem is. Here's another point where the problem is. Since 1970, our outlays, the amount of money we spend, has increased by 3,000% since the 1970s. Our receipts, the amount of money we take in taxation, has increased by 2,200% since the 1970s. You're telling me that we don't have enough money or that we're not spending enough money to do the things that we need? Those things are up 3,000 and 2,200% respectively. No, it's been plenty. Since the 50s, you're talking about the outlays up 9,000% since then, and the incomes, theft, up 6,600% since then. Interestingly enough, our money supply, the amount of money that we've either created or has been created, is also up 6,800% since the 50s, and our GDP is only up 4,500%. That's where you get the inflation, when you have more money, way more money being created than the amount of product, than the amount of production that's happening in the economy. The problem is not the billionaires. It's not the rich people. If you're mad about taxes, then you're mad at the government. You're mad at the person that's taxing you. How did we get that one wrong? If we can't place the blame on the person that's actually taxing you, then what are we going to do? Coming right up, we're going to talk about some gun rights conversations, some other stuff going on in the news, and then we'll get through Dumb Bleep of the Week. We got 10 items for the live group to vote on.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees of less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. And thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org. Well, as you know, Charlie and I have a daily podcast called Good Morning Liberty. At night, we're called Liberty at Night. During the day, we're called Good Morning Liberty. 1,216 episodes for you guys to go check out on your favorite podcast app. Go do it right now. Spike Cohen and David Hogg had a debate on gun control. This is kind of a...
You can tell it's David Hogg by the orange square on his...
Yeah, it's right next to him.
Yeah, he's got an orange square right by him.
It was an okay debate. It was about an hour and 50 minutes long. If you want to watch the YouTube video, if I remember, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It was fine. There was something missing from it, though, and that's that they did talk mostly about gun control, and they talked about whether or not it worked in reducing murders or suicides or whatever. Unless I missed part of it, they never really talked about the real reason behind the Second Amendment. I'm not blaming anyone for that. It didn't come up in the questions, really. It was really over mass shootings and murder and stuff like that. They didn't talk about the real reason for the Second Amendment. And someone did when it came to the Q&A. And so this is kind of a good news, really cool clip that we posted out on social media. I'm sure some other people have as well. But this is a really good clip of someone asking David Hogg a question.
I mean, here's the truth of the matter. Some people could, people using guns could, whatever, kill 50% of the population. It doesn't change the basic principle.
Doesn't change your rights.
Doesn't change
your natural rights.
Doesn't change the rights of individuals.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, it's not the case, that it's as bad as you just used in that example. But
I'm just saying it wouldn't matter.
No, it wouldn't matter. At all. Charlie does not care about innocent life.
I'm against death.
Okay, here's this clip. It's really good.
I am a Chinese immigrant who survived communism. And under Mao, 40 million people were starving to death after he sold communism to them. And 20 million people died, murdered during his Cultural Revolution. So my question to you, David, is that can you guarantee me, a gun owner tonight, our government in the U.S., in D.C., will never, never become a tyrannical government. Can you guarantee that to me?
There's no way I can ever guarantee that any government will not be tyrannical.
Well, then the debate on gun control is over because I will never give up my guns. Never, never. And you should go to China to see how gun control works for dictatorship of CCP.
All right.
They took the mic away from her, from a woman. He lowered the mic.
Well, no, it's okay. She's Asian.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's fine.
I like how she just declared the debate's over.
That was so good. Such a good moment. And I literally, just like how I posted it online, this is the only question that really matters when it comes to the gun control debate because it speaks to the actual spirit of the Second Amendment and why it's so important that right to keep and bear arms is protected by the government. You have the right whether they protect it or not. They might try to say that you don't have it. They're not going to protect it, but you still have that natural right regardless. But just a perfect way to ask that question, can you guarantee it? It sounds a lot like the argument that we'll make to a Bernie supporter. Well, can you guarantee me that someone that you agree with is going to be the president after Bernie or after Biden? Can you guarantee me that Donald Trump Jr. is not going to be the president or Trump again? No, you can't. So do you want to give the power to those people?
That's the argument we make against power.
That's it.
Yeah. Even if it pushes your agenda, do you want someone that you don't like to have that same power, to wield that power against you in a way you're not going to like?
Exactly.
And the answer to that is no. We have to think beyond in the immediate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to have a further time horizon to realize that it's really about, at least politically, it's about power. And how are they going to use that power against you? And the whole idea of America was to limit government power.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because throughout history, even right now in the world, throughout history, governments will use power to do whatever they want, include kill 20 million people, as she so rightfully pointed out. In fact, that's probably low estimates.
So one part of the debate that was really annoying was something that David Hogg kept bringing up. And then that's all we'll talk about on the debate. I wanted to give a public service announcement because I'm sick of hearing people make a specific argument. At least two times in the first 20 minutes, David Hogg was talking about rights and the amendments. And he talked about the First Amendment And he said, that's why it's illegal to yell fire in a crowded theater. And he used that example a couple times to talk about how your rights are not absolute. And I just wanted to give a little PSA for everyone. It is not illegal to yell fire in a crowded theater. The Supreme Court did not rule that. There was not a case about that. It was not a ruling. It was just a random thing mentioned in one of the opinions that had nothing to do with the case. And that even the specific case where that was mentioned off the cuff has actually been overturned anyway since then. And that's it. And somehow people will quote this justice. Which one was it? Oliver Wendell Holmes was the one that wrote that. So this is from Reason. They say the erroneous idea. Go ahead, Charlie. You read this.
All right. The erroneous idea comes from the 1919 case of Schneck versus United States. The case concerned whether disrupting anti-draft pamphlets could lead to a conviction under the Espionage Act and had nothing to do with fires or theaters. In his opinion, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote that, quote, the most stringent protection of free speech would not protect a man in falsely shouting fire in a theater and causing a panic. However, now, that is very important, though, what he says there. It's not about shouting fire. The thing is causing a panic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We talk all the time, like, your rights end where another's begins.
Yeah.
If you use your rights, whether it be guns or free speech or whatever, and you impose and you cause harm to someone else, well, that's where the line is drawn. You can't cause actual harm to someone else. So the causing a panic thing is very important. In that line alone is what I'm pointing out there.
Although I just question, like, whether or not you could be held responsible for the way that people panic in the situation. You know, kind of sounds like it's on them. But, you know, I get it. Sorry, we don't have to get too nuanced on that.
Hang on. If you and I are having a conversation and I say, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah.
And so you pull out your gun and shoot me in self-defense because I just said freedom of speech.
Well, you made a personal threat to me at that time. So that... He didn't say, well, I'm about to blow up the theater or whatever.
What I'm meaning is causing harm. You're causing harm.
Yeah,
that's the point.
I got you.
That's the point. That's the important part. However, this idea was introduced as an analogy, meant to illustrate that, as Trevor Trim wrote in The Atlantic in 2012, quote, the First Amendment is not absolute. It is what lawyers call dictum, a justice's ancillary opinion that doesn't directly involve the facts of the case and has no binding authority. The phrase, though an oft repeated axiom in debates about the First Amendment, is simply not the law of the land now, nor has it ever been. Something made all the more apparent when Schneck versus United States was largely overturned in 1969 by Brandenburg versus Ohio. Quote, anyone who says you can't shout fire in a crowded theater is showing that they don't know much about the principles of free speech or free speech law or history. That's Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression President Greg Lukianoff,
ironically called fire.
Yeah, yeah. This old canard, a favorite reference of censorship apologists, needs to be retired. It's repeatedly and inappropriately used to justify speech limitations.
Anyhow, that's it. I just wanted to give a little PSA because he mentioned that a couple times and he's doing it in a debate. And it's clear that David Hogg, I don't think he took it as seriously as he should have, or, you know, Spike Cohen came with data. He printed out papers, he printed out graphs, and was showing them to the crowd and stuff. And David Hogg just literally came there with nothing prepared. His basic answer was, it's the guns, because I feel like it's the guns. Mm-hmm. And that was his entire debate performance. Yep. But regardless, the lady at the end, she won the debate. Yeah,
she should have been the one up there. I mean, Spike's good, but she should have been up there. The other thing I want to say about this real quick is that no right is absolute. Again, your rights end where another's begins, because you have to have that boundary. Like, I have the right to carry a firearm. I have the right to shoot my firearm. I have a right to whatever. I don't have a right to shoot someone without self-defense, without mm-hmm. cause. Like, that is not exercising your right to the Second Amendment.
Yeah, we would also say that we'd be okay. Let's say that you went to prison for shooting someone with your gun. We might say that sometimes convicted felons don't have the same rights as other people do. Although if you've been let out of prison, that means that you did pay your debt to society and maybe you should get all your rights back after that. So bigger question there. I don't know. We can move on to FISA. because I know you love FISA. Yep. It's one of your favorite things.
Mm, yep. She may have a point.
Got to tell you about our newest sponsor, Monetary Metals. Monetary Metals, newest sponsor. Okay, so we got a new link for you guys to go to. We all know the dollar is losing value, and we all know that gold protects you from dollar devaluation. But what if you could do more than just protect your wealth in gold? What if you could grow your wealth in gold instead of in dollars, which is a pretty cool idea? We're very excited to introduce to you Monetary Metals, a company which offers a yield on gold paid in gold.
With Monetary Metals, you can earn from 2 to 5% or even higher rates for accredited investors on gold and silver by leasing and loaning your metal to qualified precious metals businesses. The best part, the returns are paid in ounces of physical metal and there are no storage fees. How does that work? Well, if you're earning 3%, it means that for every 100 ounces you have, you're earning 3 additional ounces every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, getting paid in gold is pretty...
That's pretty cool.
Pretty sweet.
And then the gold goes up in value too, so that's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's your metal and you're in control. Monetary Metals originates and thoroughly qualifies any opportunity before it's listed on their platform. If you don't like an opportunity, simply opt out.
You can open an account directly on Monetary Metals' website in less than 15 minutes. Fund your account by purchasing gold directly from Monetary Metals at less than 1% over the spot price. Or you can use gold you already have, and you can earn interest on gold that you already have. That's pretty cool. They provide free shipping and insurance to get the gold or silver to one of their vault partners. For more information or to get started with your account, go to monetary-metals.com/GML. That's monetary-metals.com/GML. Miss, I saw a lot of people posting about this stuff last night. I did want to say FISA was actually a law. This was passed in 1978. So it's not just this brand new thing, but it was given tons of new powers after 9/11. It used to be like foreign state actors, and those are the people that they could surveil, had to be that. And then they expanded it to things like terrorists and lone wolf terrorists, which essentially is anyone that they want to surveil.
Especially right-wing terrorism. Yeah,
especially domestic terrorists, stuff like that. From The Hill, they say frustrations.
By the way, we talked about this a long time ago on the show that, you know, once they can make up these terms or whatever, they'll start to define you as them.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. and then they can apply the law to you because now they can define you as a domestic right-wing terrorist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so once they put out these definitions, I think we talked about this when this show was called The Big Freedom Show, you know,
long time ago.
Go back and listen to 20. Was that odd 19?
18, at least.
Odd 18.
18.
Somewhere around there.
Frustrations are boiling over in the GOP. This is being spun as really good news. And I'm kind of on the fence about which one it is. I'm not on the fence. It's not going to be good news because they're still going to pass it and nothing's going to change. But sorry, here's what's being spun as good news right now among the Liberty circles. Frustrations are boiling over in the GOP conference after 19 Republicans blocked legislation to reauthorize the government's surveillance powers. A number that stunned Washington on Wednesday and sent GOP leaders scrambling for a plan B to shore up national security protections before they expire next week. So 19 Republicans joined all of the Democrats who were just voting against it because it was in the rules session, and they blocked this FISA renewal. The tank procedural vote sent House Republicans to a hasty conference meeting behind closed doors in the Capitol basement. Their second of the day, where they all basically just yelled at each other. Speaker Mike Johnson listened to his colleagues and took notes throughout the huddle.
Is that a real person?
I think he could be. I'm not sure. According to lawmakers in the room, and at times he responded to qualms members air. But the speaker did not lay out the path forward on the contentious question of how to reauthorize Section 702 of FISA, leaving Republicans wondering how the House will reform the country's ability to spy on foreigners and Americans abroad by next week's deadline. Sorry, they forgot to put them. I'm sure it was an honest mistake.
Yeah.
Rule votes have historically been predictable, with the majority party voting in favor and the minority party against, regardless of how lawmakers plan the vote on the underlying legislation. That's changed in this Congress, with conservatives repeatedly using the procedural votes to protest legislation leadership has brought to the floor. But even so, 19 no votes shocked many in the Capitol. The thing is here, they voted no in this rules session. to try and stop this from coming to the floor. And people are saying, well, this is great. This is them blocking it. You know, this is a win for liberty. And then I noticed that people like Thomas Massie weren't on the list of people who voted no on this thing. And I will admit I have some biases. I tend to trust Thomas Massie more than anyone else who's currently in Congress.
His record speaks for itself.
Yeah, pretty good record overall. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, what's up with that? You know, Massey's out there talking about FISA all the time. He clearly cares about this. Why did he vote? Why did he vote yes on this while 19 others voted no? And this is why. He posted this out at like basically 11 p.m. last night. He said people have been misled today. There was not a vote on the FISA bill. There was a vote on a resolution that would have allowed FISA, as well as six amendments to it, including a warrant requirement amendment and three other pieces of legislation, to come to the floor. So they actually blocked it from coming to the floor, along with the amendments that would have required a warrant that they were trying to amend to FISA. Now, that doesn't mean that amendment would pass, that they would actually do it, but they would at least have a vote on it. And so still going back and forth on whether or not this is a good thing. Let me go to his actual thread. He said that Democrats vote no. Typically, Republicans vote yes. When it's partisan, 19 Republicans voted with all the Democrats to stop everything from coming to the floor, including the warrant amendment to FISA. Many of us are adamantly opposed to the warrantless surveillance, voted for the resolution, wanting to get a recorded vote on warrants, and recognizing the speaker can otherwise suspend the rules and bring anything to the floor without a resolution. So that's the important part right there. You might think, well, who cares about getting these amendments onto the floor? They're not going to vote for the amendments anyway. And so why don't we just block it from coming to the floor? And that blocks FISA from 702 from being renewed. And therefore, that's a win. So why wouldn't you vote in favor of that? The answer is, now Mike Johnson can suspend the rules and go directly to a floor vote without doing any of the amendments and just re-up it the way that it currently is, mm-hmm. and nothing changes.
Yep.
And so regardless, the answer is probably, because they're going to have a vote on it, regardless, the answer is probably they're going to renew 702. That's probably what's going to happen.
With no amendments.
The question was, were you going to have the opportunity to vote on these amendments to add more protections and to add a warrant requirement, or were you just going to have it pushed through the rules with no debate and just vote on it where it's going to pass and nothing's going to change? Those were your actual options.
And what Thomas Massie says here is important. He said the vote might not have passed, but everyone would have had to go on the record for the world to see.
Mm-hmm. Which,
and by the way, the Congress has gotten really good at abstaining from the record.
Yeah, they have.
That way you can't see what they actually vote for.
Let me see. Now that the rules resolution for the bill plus amendments has failed, the swamp could suspend the rules to pass a worse FISA. They could make concessions and improve the rules for the bill. They could say they don't need a new bill to keep FISA going, or they can let the Senate move first on FISA. So the Senate could do it and then send it back to the House. And then the House could just pass what the Senate did to get around all of the House rulemaking process as well.
Did you bring up his speech? Did you listen to it?
It's here. I haven't actually listened to it. It's 3 minutes long. We could listen to a little bit of it.
Let's see what he says here.
From Kentucky.
I thank my colleague from Texas. Today we're voting on a resolution that will bring forward reauthorization of a program that's been abused for decades, the FISA 702 surveillance program. Before we vote on that program, though, this resolution that we're voting on now prescribes that we will bring forward an amendment to require warrants. If you want to spy on Americans, if you want to use this database as a backdoor to look at the privacy, the private information of Americans, you would need a warrant if this amendment passes. Now, there's some people who say, oh, getting a warrant is too hard.
I did want to clarify something. So people think that, let's say if you pass this, that would mean that they wouldn't spy on Americans anymore. That's not the case. They still will collect the same information. The answer is whether or not they can go into the database when the information is collected and actually view the spying that took place on the Americans.
Right.
You know, it's like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, you know, was it spying on Americans?
Mm-hmm. They still have the database.
They still have the database. And so what people make the argument says, oh, it takes too long to go and get a warrant. We can't do this. And we got to, people are talking and people are operating. No, you're still doing the spying. You're still collecting the same information. It's whether or not you can actually go and listen to the information. That is the question.
And so, you have to go and provide evidence that you need a warrant, and a judge has to say, which, I mean, most judges are going to rubber stamp it anyway, but hey, at least it gives us something.
Yeah.
You know, where someone could argue like, no, you can't have that warrant.
All right, here we go.
Slow us down. You'll put America in danger. Listen, I've been in the SCIF, the classified area where they're supposed to tell us the problems with requiring a warrant, and they never have told us an example, a single example of where getting a warrant would be a problem to national security. In fact, we've got a provision in the warrant amendment that says in exigent circumstances, you can skip that step. You'll hear today that, oh, everything's fine. We don't need the warrant amendment. We've got 53 reforms in this package. Here's the problem with those reforms. We rely on the same people that abused the system to enforce those reforms. And they still don't go to the constitutional level that is required in this country. Who doesn't trust those 53 reforms? Congress doesn't trust those 53 reforms. The authors of this bill, you know how I know? Because they put an exemption, two exemptions for themselves in this bill. That's right. If the FBI is going to use 702 FISA to spy on congressmen, they have to tell Congress. They even have to get permission from the congressman they're spying on if they say it's for the congressman's own good.
Well, you get Charlie and I's responses to Congressman Thomas Massey coming right up, along with some more Liberty goodness and Dumb Bleep of the Week as well, coming right up on Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. BitRefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Who doesn't trust those 53 reforms? Congress doesn't trust those 53 reforms. The authors of this bill, you know how I know? Because they put an exemption, two exemptions for themselves in this bill. That's right. If the FBI is going to use 702 FISA to spy on congressmen, they have to tell Congress. They even have to get permission from the congressman they're spying on if they say it's for the congressman's own good.
That's pretty crazy, right? You've never heard of them putting exemptions for themselves.
Exempt yourself, huh? How about that?
That's good stuff.
We wouldn't want anybody to find out about, you know, butt stuff in Congress.
No, you wouldn't want to know about butt stuff at all. We're going to be caught
bent over a table, huh?
Do you have a few minutes to talk about a really simple topic before we go?
I sure as hell do.
Okay. All right. Abortion. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah, that's very simple. It's wrong.
Abortion. Guys, are you the same guy you were 10 years ago? Because I'm not. I woke up one day and realized I didn't have the same energy, the same lean muscle mass, or the get up and go in the bedroom I used to have. As we age, we lose testosterone. They call it the man hormone. I call it the spark from my nateness. But there is a solution. The powerful testosterone booster in Nugenix Total T. I've only been taking this for a few weeks, but I can already tell you it's boosted my energy. I'm running around fixing stuff in the house, going on walks, and yes, I've even started working out. And by the way, my wife says this is none of your guys' business, but the Nate she met 14 years ago is back in the bedroom, if you know what I mean. Nugenix Total T testosterone booster with Testofen will help you turn back the clock and re-energize your life. Prove it to yourself risk-free. Try Nugenix Total T before you buy. There's nothing to lose and everything to gain. New energy, muscle, drive, and even more passion. Get your complimentary sample when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword GML. Nugenix Total T's power boost is backed by clinical studies and real science. Nugenix's key ingredients like Testofen has been shown to boost free testosterone levels in men. In other words, it's based in science and it works. Nugenix Total T's unprecedented formula with key ingredients that safely maximizes your free and total testosterone levels helps you increase lean muscle mass and skyrockets your performance as you age, whatever your age. If you're not totally satisfied, Nugenix will refund 100% of your purchase price plus shipping and processing. Now get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword GML. Text now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, the newest and most powerful fat incinerator ever with key ingredients to help you lose fat fast and get lean fast. Absolutely free. Text 231-231 and enter keyword GML. Text 231-231 and enter keyword GML. Texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply. Number one, doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent survey conducted by IQVIA 2022. So we had this Arizona Supreme Court ruling that happened a couple days ago. And it's weird, I'll admit. It's a little crazy. Did you hear about this, Charlie?
No.
Okay, well, Arizona.
I don't live in the desert.
Arizona had a law from 18...
Do people still live there, the desert?
Some people live there.
They know it's mostly just
I know.
Sand.
It's beautiful out there. I love the way it looks out there. It's great. Yeah. You got like rocks and stuff.
With all the water they're stealing from the river.
Exactly.
To get grass to grow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
But I wouldn't live there, though, because you can't kill kids.
You would.
So I wouldn't want to go there. You know? Yeah. All right. This is a law from 1864, which is odd because it's 50 years before Arizona was actually a state. I will fully admit I do not understand how there is a law from before Arizona was technically even a state in the Union that this reverted back to. I'm just saying I'm going to declare ignorance on how that's even a thing. I'm just going to be totally honest with you, okay? I'm not really sure. The Arizona Supreme Court on Tuesday upheld a near-total abortion ban with exemptions only to save the mother's life. The court
was
ruled...
Was this like the first town in Arizona? They like wrote it in dirt?
One lady talked about getting an abortion.
Yeah.
Outside the council got together.
Outside the saloon? Yeah. You know? Where is this stored?
The court ruled...
Can we read the original law?
No.
The paper?
Mm-mm. That dried up. The court ruled that the 1864 law supersedes the state's 2022 15-week ban. It reversed a prior decision by the Arizona Court of Appeals, siding with the more recent law. The 4-2 opinion sets up a high-stakes battle over a possible November ballot measure that would protect abortion in Arizona up to 24 weeks of pregnancy. I will mention this one more time, and I know, if you have a super strong moral conviction on this argument, then this part shouldn't actually matter to you. But this abortion thing is probably going to swing the presidential election. And I know for us libertarians, when you're choosing between evil number one or evil number two, it's not that big of a deal. But this is probably going to swing the election. Florida is going to have a ballot measure in November. And it looks like Arizona is going to have a ballot measure.
Yeah, ballot members.
Yes. Ballot measure in November.
Yeah.
That's where the member part came from, just so you know.
It's whether or not these babies can be a member of society or whether or not we can kill them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be about. And the thing is, it's going to go in favor of allowing abortion up to 24 weeks of pregnancy.
You know, so this is actually kind of interesting because I had a debate with Dan Fishman on his Facebook. He put it out there about, how he believes in the woman's right to choose and said something about, that that the whole idea of whether or not it's a life is debatable. And I'm like, see, that's the weird thing to me, is because it's not, it's actually not debatable. Like, the longstanding, if we're going to talk about consensus of science, the longstanding consensus of science is that literally a zygote is a human life,
mm-hmm.
with its own DNA, with its own separate abilities to be human. It is human. If we found a zygote on Mars, we would find life on Mars.
We would rejoice about finding life on
science,
Mars.
Yes. I don't like to say science is settled, because I think you should always question things, but like, it's so weird to me that we're like, well, it's debatable. I'm like, it's really not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fact. Now, the debate lies in what you're allowed to do with that, because you do have competing rights. So I've said this for a long time. Morally, I'm against it. I think if you choose to commit the act that could result in the consequences of a child, you should suffer those consequences morally. Okay?
Suffer.
But also, or enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, some uh-huh. birthing persons mm-hmm. enjoy those consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Others don't, you know? Yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I can see principally that there are competing rights, because a woman owns herself.
Yeah.
And even if you decide to commit the act, just like if I invite Nate over to my house, which I did today, you know, and at any point, because it's my private property and I own myself, I could tell Nate to leave. And if he doesn't leave, then I can use force to protect my private property. Okay. But I'm not allowed to just murder him to then remove his body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I want him out of here so bad that I've got to kill him, you know?
Yeah.
But I am allowed to evict him. I'm allowed to say you're no longer welcome.
Possibly these days we'd have to check and see if you're allowed to evict me. I don't know.
It'll take like 30 days.
I might squat in this place. We'll see.
But that's the thing. How does a fetus not have squatting rights? You know,
it's a question.
You know, most of the time when you do an ultrasound, its knees are up. It's squatting mm-hmm. inside the womb.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so
that's squatter's rights if I ever heard of her, you know,
I should bring that up.
There you go.
9 months of squatting rights, you know?
So the interesting thing that's happening right now is that people are actually starting to turn on Trump, because Trump came out and said that he did not agree with this Arizona law. Now, too bad, everyone who passed this law has been dead for quite a long time now. So, there's no one to yell at.
That we know of.
And they put something in a 2022 law that said if Roe versus Wade was ever overturned, that it would revert back to the original law in Arizona, which was this 1864 law. And so that's why it reverted back to it. And so whatever, that's something. Well, they caught up with Trump. You see, Trump knows something. And we know something about Trump, by the way. Trump doesn't have any principles.
No.
Okay? Does Trump care about abortion? The answer is no.
No.
I'm sorry, I don't know him personally, but the answer is no to that question. Mm-mm. He doesn't care. And so anyone who's surprised by Trump saying, oh, it's a states' rights issue, this is a states' rights thing, I don't have a position on abortion, this should be left up to the states, that's why we overturn Roe versus Wade.
Trump is a chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He'll shapeshift whatever, and he'll frame it in a way that all of his supporters will still support him.
Well, he's a narcissist.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's just what he's going to do. He doesn't have any actual world principles except for whatever helps him get ahead and what he wants to do. And so you shouldn't be surprised about this unless you were just completely lying to yourself and in the dark about who Donald Trump was this whole time. But the answer to this is Trump wants to win the election. He wants to be the president. And if he comes out here and says, oh yeah, total abortion ban, that's totally fine. The election's over at that time. The polls are in on this stuff. People do not want these total bans. They don't want 6-week bans. They start to be okay with like 15, but then they're still worried that it's going to creep down to being like 6 or something like that. And we can talk about the moral argument and whether or not the polls saying that you should be able to kill some human beings shouldn't matter, because you wouldn't take a vote democratically on whether or not you should kill some human beings.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and so, well, imagine if Jews were on the ballot,
mm-hmm.
you know,
well, a lot of people have likened this to slavery. So
50.1% of the population was like, yeah, we can kill Jews at any time.
Yeah. I mean, you don't leave human life up to a democratic vote. Yeah. You know, pretty much everyone agrees with that, but
the mob will find the person guilty every time,
but they
pick up stones.
There's something different about abortion. And I was talking to the live group about this the other day. there is something different. And I'll just say it real quick. If you were to walk up to a kid on the street that's playing on their bike and shoot them, everyone would agree that that's murder. Everyone. The craziest leftist, Looney Tunes, nut job would say, yeah, it's murder.
Well, unless it was a straight white man.
White, probably still murder, yeah. But I care a little bit less about it. And Republicans would agree it's murder. But then when you have an abortion, and let's say it's at 10 weeks, let's just go kind of in between these laws, 10 weeks. Most people don't think that that's murder. And there's some kind of difference.
Because definitions matter. Mm-hmm. Humans have done this throughout history where they define things as not people so that they don't feel guilty about controlling or killing them.
I think even defining, even if they say that they are people, they still would say it's not murder. And what comes into play is the competing rights of the mother and whether or not, you know, the mother has to be forced to carry a baby. Or what I mean, we're not going to solve this problem today, but I told the live group the other day after the show was over in the post show, which you can listen to by going to joingmail.com.
Why doesn't the woman in the womb get a say?
That
let's kill all the boys, whatever, but let's talk about the women that are aborted.
The answer
is we know for certain, by the way, at zygote level, after conception, when it's literally one cell, we know whether or not it's male or female. Mm-hmm. By the chromosomes. It's either XX or XY. Okay? So my thing is...
Okay, boomer.
Why doesn't that woman get a choice? If we're talking about women, doesn't she own her own body too?
I agree with you morally on this. The answer to that is, which I know that you kind of subscribe to the evictionist theory. The answer to that is that person is entirely, completely dependent on the mother for life. You're talking before viability. I'm totally fine with a national ban on post-viability abortions. There's no reason to me.
Define viability.
If the baby can be saved.
That's different for every baby.
It's different for every baby, but okay, let's say within reason. Uh-oh, I said reason.
Uh-oh. Let's Are you say, using the reasonable standard
In known
here?
Medical science, what is the earliest a baby has been saved?
I think it's 20 weeks.
Okay. So 20 weeks.
But you know, when Roe versus Wade viability was 26 weeks.
Or the problem is what we're doing right now is we're working our way down to the eviction theory right now. Yeah. What we are saying is just don't kill the baby.
Yeah.
Try to save the baby as if it were a child laying on a table that was in critical condition that you said you were going to do no harm and that you were going to save, you know, try to save all life or whatever doctors have to say. There's other stuff.
The Hippocratic Oath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to do. Just don't kill the baby. And I'm fine with that because I think it is ridiculous that you would at least take a baby that you could save and instead kill it.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It's very weird.
Isn't that kind of weird?
It's gross.
That sounds a little bit more like murder to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think more people would agree that that's kind of like murder.
Well, that's why they changed the definitions, though. Mm-hmm. And that's important. There's a reason we didn't count black people as regular people. Okay. They were considered literally the three-fifths compromise. Okay. There was a reason we couldn't consider them as people, because if we did, then your conscience would be like, oh man, we're whipping these people for no reason and killing them and whatever and not. Yeah, man, I feel so guilty. But but you didn't want to feel guilty. There's a reason that Hitler and the Germans classified Jews as less than people. They were equated to dogs. Why is that? Probably. Because it makes it so much easier. Now, why are babies referred to as fetuses and not fully formed humans yet or whatever the case may be? It's much easier to kill them. It's much easier to have that stance. Whenever you can classify something that will limit your conscious guilt, humans will do that. Mm-hmm. They've done it throughout forever. And by the way, abortion might be the greatest genocide so far in human history. There's been over 100 million babies killed. Over 100 million. Think about that.
And that's the thing that both sides need to realize.
In a couple years, it's going to be more than all the other genocides combined.
Mm-hmm.
It's the greatest atrocity we've ever had. And it's all done by a definition of viability or whatever the case may be. It's complete rubbish.
The problem that the pro-life, the very pro-life people have to solve here is that the moral argument has not been won yet. For whatever reason, we don't have to debate that. But for whatever reason, the moral argument has not been won, or you wouldn't have these massive election swings that are due to abortion and these massive poll results saying that people don't want it to be outlawed. Like, this moral argument has not been won. Now, maybe the states' rights argument has been a little bit more won than the moral argument, but for whatever reason, people do view this differently as murder. And as long as people view it different from murder, you haven't won yet. And that is the thing that people actually have to work on, and forcing the laws on top of people. Like, I think we'd have a harder, there are people who don't think that killing another person should be illegal. You know,
yeah.
There are people, but yeah. Most people in society,
a lot of them are in gangs,
agree. Yeah. Most people in society agree that that's something that's morally wrong and that you shouldn't do. I think if 70% of society thought that it would be fine for me to kill you right now, we might have a harder time having murder be illegal in our society. You know, it might be tough to enforce, and people might
go on a
ballot
measure.
Yeah, go on a ballot measure and yeah. Vote against it. Yeah. You know,
but, do you have a right to kill your neighbor for any reason whatsoever? Yes or no?
Yeah. But for whatever reason, that moral argument hasn't been won yet. And that's the new frontier, in my opinion, for the pro-life side. Yeah. You got rid of Roe, and so it's down to states' rights. Well, the states' rights issue is telling you that in a lot of places around the country, people do not agree with your position on abortion. They don't actually think that it's murder.
But it's in the proper place. The debate's happening in the proper place. That's good.
It's always better for it to be on a smaller, more local level. Whatever more local level we could come up with,
yes,
is better. But that's where people need to focus their attention now.
And my thing is like, okay, let their moral crimes bring them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't live in a state that agrees with it. We should see this migration, honestly, over the next, 100 years.
Oh, by the way, the
states that allow it, move out of those states. Go to states that don't allow it. And then the states, because look, it's abortion is very complicated. I do agree with some of the people in the live group, because we're having a full-on debate in the live group, by the way. First of all, I wanted to point out that I think it was Mead who said something really funny. Oh, no, T-Dub, he said that these are the umbilical cord. So umbilically abled people.
Umbilically abled people?
Yeah. That's what babies are.
I gotcha.
I thought that was funny. Anyway, so I do want to say that this is an extremely complicated issue because here's why it's so complicated. You do have equal competing rights in this situation. If I go back to principles of life, liberty, and property, then you have competing liberty here,
mm-hmm.
and your rights ends where another's begins. Okay, so what do you do about that? It's extremely complicated, and you know, I don't care. The arguments about like what happens after the baby's born, who's going to raise it, whatever, that doesn't matter. None of that matters.
No, because that's an argument for killing poor people.
Right. Or disabled people.
Yeah.
Or Jewish people or whatever. No. None of that matters. Okay. What matters is whether or not this is a life. It is. Okay. That's the fact that there is even a debate on that. It reminds me of what Jordan Peterson said. If you can get them to swallow the lie that a man is a woman and a woman is a man, you can get them to swallow any lie. I think it's the same thing. If you can get them to swallow the lie that a fetus is not a baby, it's not a human life, you can get them to believe anything. It's a lie. Straight up. I don't even think it should be debatable. And it blows my mind that really smart people think that it's a debate.
Well, I don't think there is a scientific debate on whether or not it is a life. And if you don't do the abortion, like, there's going to be a human being that's going to exist. And so you're...
No, that people are debating that.
Yeah.
They're still saying that it's not a conscience.
It is a debate.
Or a sentient being, or it doesn't breathe on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It's a parasite.
Yeah.
It's a cancer. You know?
Hmm.
It's like, okay, well, a newborn baby, a 6-month-old baby, doesn't eat on its own.
Yeah.
Is that also parasitic? You know?
You just, honestly, you can do an abortion up until about five, I think, is the thing.
Until they can wipe their own ass.
All right. We got to go.
We'll do the Big Daddy principle.
Speaking of murder, O.J. Simpson died. And so just wanted to say,
Speaking of murder,
justice has been served.
His mother should have aborted him.
Finally.
You know? If only his mother would have aborted him.
It's a case where it would have been better. You know. Except for he did have some pretty funny scenes in Naked Gun, and that almost makes it worth it. I'm not sure.
He's a pretty good football player.
Good football player, you know. Yeah. So what are you going to do? But they say justice delayed is justice denied. In this case, I think it's not true. I think this is justice served.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Well, you know, he had cancer.
Yeah.
So
God won, OJ Simpson.
Zero.
Minus two. Yeah.
All right. If you enjoyed today's episode, which I did, I've enjoyed a lot of the episodes recently.
Good. We should keep doing it.
You know, I think I've enjoyed this for around like 5 or 6 years now. What about you?
What's up? Sorry, I was reading the live group.
I said, I've enjoyed this conversation with you for about 5 or 6 years now.
What we've just been talking constantly. Yeah. For 5 or 6 years now, which is crazy.
Yeah, just two straight dudes, two straight white males.
Mansplaining. You know,
just mansplaining. Uh-huh. If you're not on TikTok, there's this whole soft guy era.
Oh my God, here we go again.
That's viral. I'm just going to say, check it out. It's really funny. It's really funny. To me, I've been saying for a while now that when all these things happen, like with businesses or whatever, I just hope the businesses quit, or I hope the men quit. You know, like let them have it. Let them have the society that they're arguing for. Okay. Let's give them a state or a couple states, you know, and they can make all their, you know, feminist boss girl rules and they can pay everybody $1 million an hour and whatever. Let's just make all the rules they want. Just give them a state.
Well, we have to agree that we're not going to trade freely with that state though, because they can't have our stuff.
We can still trade freely.
Okay. Yeah. Tariffs?
No. Why wouldn't you be able to trade freely?
Well, because then they get to still benefit from all the men outside of their state.
They would have to produce enough to be able to afford.
That's true.
That's the thing.
Fine.
So anyway, that's just some random thoughts at the end of this.
All right. Hey, we're coming up on a time where we got to take a quick break. So got to remind everyone that Don't Bleep of the Week is coming right up. That's where the live group gets together and votes on the 10 dumbest things that happened over the last week. They're going to whittle the list down to one thing. And we got to remind you to go find Good Morning Liberty. That's our daily podcast. Right now, we're called Liberty at Night because we're on the Free Talk Live Network, and it's for Tuesday night. But during the day, we're called Good Morning Liberty, and you can find 1,216 episodes wherever you get your podcast. Just search Good Morning Liberty. Come right up. Don't Bleep of the Week. What's up, y'all? It's Liberty Unite with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. It's finally time for Don't Bleep of the Week. That's where the live group gets together and votes through all the 10 options for the dumbest thing that happened in politics this week. Okay, Don't Bleep of the Week. What's number one? Number one is Mike Johnson. If you don't know a lot about Mike Johnson, you know, he actually used to be pretty skeptical of this whole FISA thing until he became Speaker of the House, and now all of a sudden he's like, oh yeah, we got to have that FISA thing. We got to have 702. We got to have this broad authority for the FBI and the NSA and whoever else it is that we don't even know about, probably CIA too, even though they're not supposed to do that. Well, they got to be spying on Americans. Now, they're not really spying on Americans or spying on foreigners, but they're spying on Americans also. And how did he come to this conclusion that this is actually something that we need? Well, he got the classified briefings as Speaker, and what he saw was, even though there were hundreds of thousands of abuses, this is something that we really need.
When I was a member of the judiciary, I saw all the abuses of the FBI, the terrible abuses over and over and over, the hundreds of thousands of abuses. And then when I became Speaker, I went to the SCIF and got the confidential briefing from sort of the other perspective on that to understand the necessity of Section 702 of FISA and how important it is for national security. And it gave me a different perspective. So I encourage all the members to go to the classified briefing and hear all that and see it so they can evaluate the situation for themselves. And I think some opinions have changed both ways, but that's part of the process. You got to be fully informed.
Here's what he saw. He saw the file that they have gathered on him that they showed to him. And they said, if you do not push people to vote for this, to continue this program. Actually, you should give us some more powers. This might accidentally be leaked. I don't know. We've already got this file. Or it's just the fact that he wants to remain in power, and they're telling him that he would just lose the speakership if he didn't push this through. Because they would use those other files that they have to corrupt other members of Congress and get them to get rid of him. There's a principled argument in here that I don't like from Mike Johnson. He said that he saw all the abuses, the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands from the FBI. Now that he became speaker, he understands how important this is for national security. I don't deny the fact that it can help national security sometimes to be able to look in on actual bad people and see if they're planning things. But there are abuses, and Americans do have rights, and we do have constitutional amendments to protect those rights. And even if there are bad people out there in the world that want to do bad things, you still have those rights. And the fact that you found out about a couple bad things does not change the fact that people still have those rights. So that's dumb bleep number one for Mike Johnson. Number two, Biden administration unleashed some new gun control measures, background checks. They're finally going to close that gun show loophole that doesn't exist. I pulled up some studies and some data on this. At the end of the day, that the studies and the data, those parts really don't matter. What matters is whether or not you have a constitutional right to bear arms and all the different ways that the federal government's going to find the power to try and screw you out of that. Or to find the way to decrease the amount of people that are able to sell guns, to go after the dealers or the private vendors that are selling guns, to try and decrease your access to be able to purchase firearms. Here's the story. Thousands more firearms dealers across the U.S. will have to run background checks on buyers when selling guns, selling at gun shows or other places outside brick-and-mortar stores, according to a Biden administration rule that will soon go into effect. The rule aims to close a loophole that has allowed tens of thousands of guns to be sold every year by unlicensed dealers who don't perform background checks to ensure the potential buyer is not legally prohibited from having a firearm. Let's talk mass shootings for a minute, because when people think about shootings, that's really what they think about. A large amount of it is gun violence, gang violence in cities, but people think about these big media events where someone used a gun to kill a lot of people. How many times do you hear, oh, if there would have been a background check, well, then this person wouldn't have been able to get these guns, but there just wasn't a background check. You see, in this person's background, in this criminal record, if there just would have simply been a background check for this person, well, then this would have never happened. How many times have you heard that story before? You probably haven't. What you heard was, they passed the background check. There wasn't any criminal history for the person, or you heard that they had the guns illegally. That's your most common, typical stories right there. And in a contentious election year, it's also an effort to show voters, especially younger ones for whom gun violence deeply resonates, that the White House is trying to stop the deaths. And that's another part of this. What you're seeing right now is something that angers me and should anger a lot of other people. Because at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself also, why is this happening right now in 2024? If they could simply make this rule and they could simply require all of these background checks, is this universal? Does this mean universal background checks? We'll finally have this now. Why are they doing it now in April of 2024? Well, Biden's not doing all that great in the polls. It's almost like it's more of an election ploy. Why are we hearing about Biden canceling a bunch of student loan debt again? Oddly enough, he tried to cancel a bunch of student loan debt before the midterm elections in 2022, and then we didn't hear much about it. And now he's trying to cancel a bunch of student loan debt again in 2024, before the elections. That's weird. Why all of a sudden are we hearing about Biden talking about finding executive orders he could sign to close down the border or to decrease illegal immigration? Why is it now in April of 2024 that the Biden administration is out there talking about finding ways to close down the border? It sort of seems like they just do these things to try to win the election and not because they actually care about these things. I think this is actually just to make it harder for law-abiding gun owners to get guns. It's not going to change anything for the people who aren't law-abiding. There's a lot of guns out there. There's already hundreds of millions of guns out there, and there's a lot of other guns out there that we don't know about as well. Dumb bleep number three, it has to do at its basis It has to do with climate change and the climate hysterians. Very concerning. Turns out wearing jeans is bad for the earth, study finds, even just once. If you're wearing, you know, that single-use pair of jeans that you have, it's bad for the environment. Recent research from Guangdong University of Technology found that wearing a pair of fast fashion jeans just once creates a whopping 2.5 kilograms of carbon emissions. The environmental wear and tear of the pants is equivalent to driving 6.4 miles in an average gasoline-powered car. One pair of jeans is like driving 6 miles. Okay, the study took jeans as an example to reveal the carbon footprint of fast fashion. Does anyone know what fast fashion is? Is this a specific thing that I'm supposed to know about? Any fashionistas in our live group right now that can tell me this? I don't know. Carbon footprint of fast fashion consumption and its additional climate impacts compared to traditional fashion are... Okay, wrote the authors of a new report set for publishing in May 2024. Jeans production and cross-broad transportation contributed 91% of the carbon footprint of fast fashion consumption, added the experts. I think maybe we should look up to see what fast fashion means. This could be very specific. And they're not just pulling your leg. To determine the CO2 effect, scientists followed the life cycle of a pair of jeans that were quickly produced, shipped, worn, washed, and discarded after about 7 uses. And that is where I start to take issue with this story. Fast fashion. I guess these are things that you don't wear regularly or I'm not really sure, but 7 uses? Maybe I'm old-fashioned and I'm not fast-fashioned like the kids nowadays, but the current stock of jeans that I have, I bought no less than 4 or 5 years ago. They're good jeans, but they're 4 or 5 years old, and they've been worn way too many times because I hate wearing jeans, so the answer is too many. But the point of what I'm saying right now is this 2.5 kilograms of carbon and 6.4 miles driven in your car, that's all determined by the fact that that this being bad for the environment is determined by the parameters in the study. They're assuming that you're only going to wear your jeans 7 times. Okay. I don't know who only wears their jeans 7 times, but that has to be a very small portion of people because you're probably more well off, which is going to be a lower percentage of people. I don't know. Maybe I'm totally off base on this. 7 times seems like none to me. I'm not sure. Someone let me know. The stages are all part of speedy sequences that most modern clothes follow, owing to the increasingly buzzy fast fashion trend. The movement sees retailers such as all of these people using an excess of resources, energy to crank out cutesy swag and accelerated rates. So maybe these are cheaper jeans that don't last very long, like what Bailey's saying. Maybe the quality has gone down quite a bit. Maybe, you know, back in '19 when I bought my jeans, they were made a lot better. And maybe these days, these jeans are just really terrible and you can only wear them 7 times. In which case, I would say maybe buy some better jeans because you're wasting a lot of money. I'm not sure. These stories are still going down the ridiculous rabbit hole of the fact that too much CO2 in the atmosphere is leading to all the bad things that ever happened on Earth. At the end of the day, it's humanity that's bad. It's human beings that are causing the destruction for all of these other human beings. So we need to get rid of human beings. That way we can save human beings. And if you followed that like I did, then it probably made as much sense as it did to me. Okay, we made it to dumb bleep number 4. Number 4, Mario Knoffel, who I had to look and make sure he was being serious about this because, I don't know, I see a lot of more, I've always felt like I saw some more right-leaning things from Mario, but maybe not. Maybe I'm confusing him with someone else, I don't know. He's got the alert siren American flag thing, so this is breaking news. New voting laws target black turnout in the South. Yes, that's they signed that into law just because of that. Southern states roll out stringent voter ID and absentee ballot laws, stirring echoes of historical suppression. These measures set... You got it. That's what it is in Idaho. They're trying to make sure the black people can't vote in Idaho. I do like how it's kind of... And South Dakota, too. Real heavy, heavy black demographic in South Dakota. These measures set to influence the 2024 elections are sparking controversy over their impact on democracy and minority voting rights. Couple things to say on this one. I'm going to talk to all the black people listening right now. I believe in you. I trust you. I think you can. I think you can do it. I think that just like white people, you can go to the DMV and you can get a state ID. I think you can do it. Some people say that you're not smart enough to do this, but I believe in you. I think you can pull this one off. I really do. I think that you can somehow find a location that has the internet and you can look up the rules for doing such thing. And you can get your light bill. You can take it over there to the DMV. You can get them to get you an ID. I believe that this is possible. This is a ridiculously, I'm back out of my sarcasm mode right now. This is a, in my opinion, ridiculously racist idea that somehow black people just can't get IDs. And I haven't yet seen the evidence that this is even the case. It's just something that people say. So that part itself is really ridiculous. Number two, we do have, I think, an issue with trust in this country and an issue with trust in elections. Sorry if this is the first you're hearing of it, but we do have an issue with trust. And I don't think that that issue is just going to go away by telling people that they're crazy. I think that we have legitimate problems with our elections nowadays, especially when we have a fairly free-flowing border. We've got a lot of different voting laws in a lot of different states. We've got electronic voting machines. We've got mail-in ballots. We've got all kinds of weird stuff going on. And if you actually care about democracy, you would want people to trust the outcome of the elections. And so you want to find a way that people are going to trust the outcome of the elections. One of those ways is to have voter ID requirements. I don't think that's a bad requirement. I think that's okay. If you're going to vote in these elections, that you prove that you are the person whose ballot you are picking up and casting for. I think that's an okay idea. Obviously, in 2020, a lot of Republicans talking about the electronic voting machines and how they might have been compromised. Something tells me that whoever wins, the loser is going to say in some way it was compromised. And we need to find ways to get around those arguments. Making the elections more secure is a way to get around those arguments. I know that you can still mess it up, but paper ballots, okay, that's one. Voter ID, okay, that's another. Mail-in ballots, absentee voting only for the elderly who can't get out to the polls or for military servicemen and women and Zs and Zers that are overseas that want to cast those absentee ballots, yeah, that's another. But not just for everyone. That's a highly easy to manipulate and cheat, in my opinion. Not saying that there's widespread evidence that that's what happens, but I'm interested in getting back to a place where people actually trust the outcomes of the elections. And so how do you do that? I think you set some rules for making sure that the right people are voting, that you don't have a bunch of illegal ballots or made up ballots, made up numbers in your computer systems. These are good things. And at the end of the day, if you're concerned about democracy, well, people trusting the outcome of an election, that's a good way to keep democracy going. Dumb bleep number four. There you go. Mario Nafal. Number five, James Clyburn. He was out there on MSNBC. And one thing he's really worried about when it comes to inflation is that there's just a bunch of disinformation out there. And so he starts off by telling you the truth. And by truth, I mean he lies about a bunch of things and says that it's the truth, while talking about disinformation, which I found to be really interesting. It's a 3-minute clip, but I only want like a minute of it. I think I'm starting this around the right spot. If not, it's okay.
I've had with people, there are concerns about things like inflation. But what we've got to get them to see is that inflation today is about 40% of what it was when Joe Biden took office. And so the inflation rates are down and people's incomes are up. Unemployment is on the decrease. And although we see the prices at the stores costing more money, people are in fact earning greater incomes. So what we've got to do is make sure that people see the policies of the Biden administration, how they affect their everyday lives, and get them to see in his policies that which is real. Not what they may hear on social media. One of the focus group people talked about social media and the misrepresentation, disinformation, all of those things are out there. And that's the battle that we have to fight.
So he wants to combat disinformation. And by combating disinformation, what he means is he's going to tell you a bunch of things that aren't true. And that's how you combat disinformation. What things did he say that aren't true? Well, he said two that aren't true. And a third one that's questionable, depending on where you look at the data. The first thing he says is that people need to realize that inflation is 40% of where it was when Joe Biden took office. Now, is that a message that you want to send out there to the people? Inflation is 40% of what it was when Joe Biden took office. That might be great if it were true, but unfortunately, I guess he thinks Joe Biden took office in June of 2022. I'm not sure, because Biden actually took office in January of 2021, and at that point, inflation was at 1.4%. Right now, inflation is at 3.5%, just going by the official BLS CPI numbers. So first off, he's fighting disinformation by either lying or just being an idiot. I don't know which one it is. I guess I don't want to say that he's being malicious here. I think he's just an idiot. You know, don't attribute to malice what can be attributed to stupidity. In this case, I would just say stupidity or ignorance. Inflation is, in fact, not 40% of what it was when Joe Biden took office. That was right around June or July of 2022 when inflation was up at 9.2%. When Joe Biden took office, inflation was at 1.4%. Now, we were in a COVID pandemic at that time. There was lower inflation. There was a lot less commerce happening in the U.S. So probably has something to do with the inflation rate being at 1.4% during that time. Not going to deny that fact. He also says that that wages are up. People are making more money. There's been some wage gains in relation to inflation over the last 6-8 months or so. But if you look at the average weekly salary of people in the United States with inflation, that's down about 0.72% when you take inflation into account. It has made some gains as of late, but that was after a whole bunch of losses that took place. This chart right here, specifically since Joe Biden took office, the wages are technically still down, unless you fractionate that down to a very specific group of workers, which would be low-skill minimum wage workers, younger minimum wage low-skill workers. Those have actually gone up. But when you take everyone else into account in the economy, wages are actually down. So keep in mind, in his worry about disinformation that's online, he either lies or gets two things wrong. So misinformation from him. And then he says unemployment's on to the climb. Now, this is not really like a lie or a big crazy point that you have to make. But I do want to point out the fact that right before the COVID pandemic, and I think it's important to look right before the COVID pandemic happened, when the government shut stuff down, the unemployment rate was at 3.5%. It's currently at 3.8%. It is down from when Joe Biden took office. When he took office, unemployment was at 6.4%. And so it is down quite a bit from when he took office. I do like to look at where it was before COVID, as I've explained several times. If you don't care about what it was the month before COVID, then what you're saying is, if a Democrat would have been in office, if it wouldn't have been Donald Trump, If it would have been Hillary Clinton instead that was in office, we would have had no lockdowns, less lockdowns. They would not have shut the country down. So we can disagree with what Trump said, and we can say, well, some of Trump's policies and then a lot of state governor policies led to this really high unemployment rate. And Biden came into office and the economy opens back up and the unemployment rate goes back down to what it used to be. You can't blame that part on Trump unless you think that if Hillary Clinton was in office instead of Donald Trump, that she would not have done any lockdowns and that the economy would have just kept moving smoothly and nothing would have changed. I think there would have been a lot more rules if it wouldn't have been Trump in charge. Lesser of two evils, still evil. We understand that part. I still think he did less to shut down America during this time than a Democrat in charge would have done. When we come back, the conclusion of Dumb Bleep of the Week, along with the winner. Who will it be? We got a lot more options for us to go through coming right up on Liberty Night and the Free Talk Live Network. Trump did a lot of stuff wrong. We did the stimulus, caused a bunch of inflation, shut down a lot of parts of the economy, had press conferences with Anthony Fauci by his side, you know, Operation Warp Speed. For those of you who aren't a fan of the vaccine, like, there's plenty of reasons to blame a lot of stuff on Trump, for sure. But I just try to look at, you know, what would we have had if it were a different president in office? Either it wouldn't have been very different or it would have been a lot worse as far as the unemployment rate and the inflation goes, in my opinion, unless, you know, like Rand Paul would have won in 2016 or whatever, would have been a lot less or a lot more unemployment in that case. Number six, Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, Democrat, Texas, suggests exempting blacks from taxes. Now, that's not really the dumb part. I'm putting this in here because it got sent over to us either in the live group or on Twitter or something like that. I believe some of the stuff she says in here, though, about reparations, and then she kind of says the quiet part out loud at the very end of this conversation. That's Dumb Bleep number six. Let me find it. Where is that? Jasmine Crockett. Here we go.
Just this past week, I saw, I don't remember which celebrity, but it was actually a celebrity, and I was like, I don't know that that's not necessarily a bad idea, but I'd have to think through it a lot. One of the things that they propose is black folk not have to pay taxes for a certain amount of time, because then again, that puts money back in your pocket. But at the same time, it may not be as objectionable to some people about actually giving out dollars. Yeah. But obviously, then you start dealing with the different tax brackets and things like that. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, we argue the reparations make sense, because so many black folk, not only do you owe for the labor that was stolen and killed and all the other things, right? But the fact is, like, we end up being so far behind, right? And so it's like, how do you bring forth people? Exactly. And so it's like, if you do the no tax thing for people that are already, say, struggling and aren't really paying taxes in the first place, it doesn't really. Exactly.
They may want those checks like they got during COVID.
Exactly. Just this past.
All right. So there's a lot of stuff in there. I was trying to write down some notes as we were going through that. One thing, obviously a fan of reparations, which is ridiculous. You know, she talks about people being owed a lot for the labor that was stolen. Owed to who? To whom? And from whom? to whom? I'm not really sure. There aren't any slaveholders that are alive in America, that we know of, not legally anyway. And there aren't any former slaves that are alive in America either. So I'm not sure who owes what money to whom in that scenario. So that's already kind of ridiculous. Now, she mentions black people not paying, not having to pay taxes, and that being a form of reparations. This is something we've said before. If it's kind of the same as when they let corporations not pay taxes, you know, as a form of a corporate giveaway, corporate welfare, whatever. When it comes to not paying taxes, well, taxation is theft. Taxation is immoral. Taxation is something that we don't agree with. And so therefore, if someone can get out of the taxation prison that people have been put in. Well, I'm not going to argue to put them back in it. Now, that's not the position that she's arguing from. She's not arguing from the position that taxation is immoral. She's arguing from the position that black people are owed money and so therefore shouldn't have to pay taxes. If we were able to do that, start with black people, that's fine. And then maybe eventually we can work and we can get white people the same rights that black people have, which is to not be stolen from every time you earn money in a free voluntary transaction with your employer. I think that would be a better world for everyone. Then later in the video, she says, well, but this might not work because a lot of black people don't pay taxes. So maybe a little bit of quiet part out loud right there. She's like, yeah, that plan wouldn't really work because a lot of black people don't really pay taxes. And then the other person's like, yeah, so right. They might rather just have the checks instead. Okay. Maybe a little bit of quiet. But then, of course, she blames it on economic circumstances and stuff like that, which made me think, I know that, people like this would not agree. People who are pushing reparations would not agree. But we've already got a form of reparations, and it's more class-based, but statistically, I guess, more black people in that category. But we have had the war on poverty since the 70s, and we spent like $30 trillion on that the whole time. That sort of seems like you're trying to make up for something. Maybe that's a form of reparations. Maybe the fact that she says most black people don't pay taxes and white people are paying taxes, I guess. Of course, it would be determined by your economic circumstances that you're in. Maybe this plan is already in place right now. Maybe we've already had reparations and they don't work. Maybe that's something that people should consider. Either way, the entire idea is ridiculous. And like I said, like I can get on board if you want to make the moral argument that taxation is theft and we're going to start off by exempting black people from taxes because taxation is immoral and theft. That's one way. That's one way to do it. But if you're going to make the argument that black people are owed reparations by these people who are not alive anymore to give to them who were not slaves, well, that's the wrong position to make that argument from. But maybe we can still come into some kind of agreement on this. I don't know. That's number six. How about number seven? Maxine Waters, she gets just accosted daily by these racists all over the place, everywhere she goes. People come up to her and they tell her terrible things about how they feel about black people because they're racist. That's not actually what happens. People come up and say that they don't like her policies or her ideas, but she has decided that they only do that because she is black. And so therefore, she is being accosted by racists all the time when she goes out. Anytime someone tells her in public that they disagree with her, it's because she's black and not because she's Maxine Waters and she supports every single dumb idea that there is.
As a member of Congress with people, who evidently had a racist attitude and recently one even confronted me in a restaurant, and they don't say racist things, but right. What they say is they don't like something I said. They don't like a position that I took. But you know that, if you were not black, you would not be approached that way.
Right, they probably would not. Right, they would think twice about doing it. They think that they can get away with doing it with you and that you're black.
Powerful stuff. Real powerful stuff. They don't say racist things to her, even though they are racist, apparently. These are racists coming up to her. They don't say racist things, though. They say that they don't like something that she did. They don't like a policy that she has. And therefore, they come up to her and they say that, but that's because they're racist, because if she wasn't black, they wouldn't come up to her and say that. They think, and then the other person, the interviewer, comes in and says, right, they think they can get away with it, because you're black. Yeah, I don't know about that one. I feel like I've seen a whole lot of videos of people accosting any politician that there is out there, even, Republican politicians. They don't like them. They could be white or they could be black. Maybe when Ted Cruz goes out places, people have confronted him in public before and called him whatever name you can come up with that's in the book of names to call people. They do that because he's white, or they do that because they don't like his policies. I've seen Rand Paul get surrounded on the street, probably in fear for his life. Did they do that because he's black and they could get away with it? Or did they do that because they were black and they could get, I'm not really sure which one it is. No, this entire idea is ridiculous. People do this to politicians all the time. And we see videos of people doing this to politicians all the time. And it has nothing to do with the politicians being black. It has to do with people disagreeing with the policies that politicians agree with or push or have put into place. So everything is racist. Not really working for me right now. But of course, why would it? I'm just a straight white man. I run the world. Moving on, completely different subject. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee is schooling some people. She sort of had her Hank Johnson moment talking about the moon. This was during all of the eclipse fever that was going on. She's talking about the moon. I'm not going to try and paraphrase what she said because I don't want those ideas to go into my mind. But let's find. Okay, hold on. We might have to go on to the next one. I'll have to find that video. I'm not seeing it right now. All right. Don't see it. That's my bad. That's number 8. Let's go to number 9, which we already watched, which is Sonny Hostin talking about the solar eclipse. I'll play that video and I'll find the other one while I'm looking for it. So let's play the clip of Sonny Hostin blaming the solar eclipse, the cicadas, and earthquakes on climate change.
Leaving, we've got a solar eclipse. We've got the earthquake.
She
ran down the hallway.
The rapture is here.
The rapture is here. And then also I learned that the cicadas are coming.
Cicadas.
Cicadas.
Although I love
for the first time in like 100 years.
No,
this is what I read.
There's two different kinds of cicadas.
Two different times are coming.
The good cicadas and the bad cicadas.
But for the first time in many, many years.
No, every 17 years this happens.
Well, that's not what I read, but maybe, you know better.
I would say
all those things together would maybe lead one to believe that, you know, either climate change exists.
That's more
or something
point.
Is really
or
going on. Returning.
Earthquakes are not at the mercy of climate change. It's underground. No,
it happens. And the eclipse, they've known about the eclipse coming because eclipse.
When Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar are acting like you're an idiot for saying what you just said, and are the voice of reason at the table saying, that's not climate change. Things have gotten really bad for Sonny Hostin. And they were trying to shut her up the whole time because what she was saying was ridiculous, of course. Unfortunately, she still finished her thoughts. Here's the video. So that's dumb bleep number 9. I'm sorry for the confusion. We'll go back to what is technically number 8. Right now, and hear from Sheila Jackson Lee talking about the moon. Let's see, here we go.
Sometimes you've heard the word full moon. Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle, which is made up mostly of gases. And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon? Are the gases such that we could do that? The sun is a mighty powerful heat that is almost impossible to go near the sun. The moon is more manageable.
WTF was that is the main question. I'm not really sure. Your guess is as good as mine. For anyone who I guess needs to know this, I didn't pull up the data on the matter, but the moon is not made up of gases, so it's a rock. I don't know exactly what it's made of. I mean, sure, there's probably all kinds of different stuff. I don't think it's comprised mostly of gases, though. This presents a great opportunity for us to watch Hank Johnson talk about,
I think, Guam
possibly capsizing, because that's immediately what it made me think of. And why wouldn't we just go ahead and play this clip just for fun?
Is a small island.
Very small island, and about 24 miles, if I recall, long. So 24 miles long, about 7 miles wide at the least widest place on the island, and about 12 miles wide on the widest part of the island. I don't know how many square miles that is. Do you happen to know?
I don't have that figure with me, sir.
My fear mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize. Will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that.
Okay. Because why wouldn't you just go ahead and play that clip for fun? That's immediately what it reminded me of. These people are still in power, and Hank Johnson thinks that islands... Now, maybe you never think about this kind of thing. Maybe you just never think about it. And you see islands and you're like, wow, that's floating in the ocean. I don't know why it doesn't eventually get pushed over to one of the other bodies of land. Are those also floating? I'm not really sure. But yeah, maybe you just never thought about it before. So, okay. But maybe before you are in a congressional hearing and you're using this as a reason that you shouldn't station troops there, which I think is what the conversation was. We could make other arguments for not stationing troops there. That'd be fine. Maybe you should look into that. And maybe when you're giving a speech about the moon and the sun, maybe you could be forgiven for thinking that the moon is made up of just a ball of gases and questioning whether or not we could ever live on it. I'm not really sure. But maybe then just don't go up in front of a bunch of people and talk about it, you know? That's fine. You can be forgiven for not knowing these things. But then you're in a position of power. Just think about all the other things that they don't know. And that they still get to vote on things that can determine your future. And on the list of things that they don't know are whether or not islands are boats. And whether or not the moon is gas. And maybe whether or not putting money towards college tuition is going to cause the price to go up or down. You know, just random stuff like that. I'm sure they know all the economic stuff, though. They definitely know the economic stuff. No way that they could be wrong on that kind of thing, too. Number 10, this is only number 10 because it's the last thing I put on here today. And not because it's the craziest or whatever. Sonny Hostin, pretty ridiculous. Sheila Jackson Lee, that's pretty ridiculous too. Actually, there was a lot of ridiculous videos that we just went through. This is number 10 because it was the last thing I added to the slides today. This is talking about student loan forgiveness. Of course, Biden announced earlier this week that he was going to be forgiving a bunch more student loans. 30 million different borrowers were going to see their loans go down or be canceled or whatever the number was. The number of people actually getting their loans canceled was a lot smaller. It was like 4 million. And then some other people are getting interest knocked off. And that's, of course, all of this rule actually goes into effect and they're actually able to do it without it getting blocked. So it could still eventually end up getting blocked, but that could end up happening after the election, and this could just be a good election piece for Biden to use, just like what they used in 2022 with all the student loan forgiveness they were doing. Anyhow, people have started bringing up the PPP loans again, the Paycheck Protection Program. I don't like it when people bring this up. The reason I don't like it is not that I support the PPP program, not that I think that that was a great use of money, not that I think that that money should have been printed or stolen or borrowed and then later stolen in all different sorts of ways and sent out to people, not because I support the program whatsoever. But there is a such thing, facts. That's a real thing, okay? And the PPP loans were forgiven because they weren't loans. They were structured like grants. And as long as you use them for what you said you're going to use them for, they were forgiven. That was it. If you use them for something else, then it wouldn't be forgiven, even though it probably still got forgiven anyway. Ed Krasenstein says, I'm not a huge fan of forgiving student loans, but why are the same people who attack student loan forgiveness so reluctant to also condemn Trump for signing the PPP loan forgiveness program into existence? Why is it okay for Trump and Congress to forgive business loans of many people who are already well off, but not okay for Biden to forgive student loans for some people who are struggling? I'd love to hear your thoughts. He said he would love to hear our thoughts, and so why not put some thoughts out there? That way he can hear them, okay? Pretty obvious answer on this. Student loans were not made to people with the promise that they would be forgiven if they use them to go to college. Like, here's your student loan. If you get this loan and you go to college, we're going to cancel this and you'll never have to pay it. That is not the way that a student loan works. Okay, you're going to go get a product or service from this business, which is a school. They are going to add value to your life, hopefully give you some more earning potential. We're going to give you a loan for that, and you're going to pay that loan back. Okay, fine. I will sign that. This is very important to me. PPP loans, hey, person, listen up. I forbid you from going outside. Actually, okay, you can go outside. That's fine. You own a business? Mm-mm. You got to shut that business down. You can't have that business going. And you're like, well, if I shut my business down, I'm going to go out of business. That's kind of like going out of business, right? Got bills I got to pay. I got a business loan that I have. How am I going to pay that loan when I can't be in business? How am I going to pay the rent of the space that I'm in and the utilities and whatever else I have to pay? What about all the people who work for me? What about those people? And so they're all immediately unemployed also. And this is law? You're saying I can't do this? Well, it's not really law. It's executive order, but whatever. You're saying I can't go to work anymore? You're just taking that right away from me without my permission? And they're like, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a PPP loan. It's not really a loan, even though it says loan in the title. If you use this to keep your business afloat, to pay your workers, to pay your business expenses, we're not going to make you pay it back. This is us giving you compensation for the fact that we are preventing you from exercising your right to do business right now. We are preventing you from doing that, and we are instead going to give you money to compensate for what you could have been making or to pay your expenses or to pay your employees during this time that we are preventing you from operating. And so the person says, well, I don't have to pay it back. And they're like, no. And they're like, are you sure? Because it's like, I'm going to need like $400,000 to stay closed for quite some time. And they're like, no, you don't got to pay it back. And I'm like, okay, I'll take the PPP loan then. Those two situations are very, very, very different things. In one case, someone freely decided that they were going to go to college. The college had a price. They did not have the money to pay the price for the college. So they went and they took a loan out from someone. They said, now I can go to college and then I'm going to pay that loan back. The other one said, I have a business. I would love it if you just leave me alone. They're like, no, I'm not going to leave you alone, but I am going to compensate you for this way that I'm not going to leave you alone. And you're not going to have to pay this compensation back, because why would you? That's ridiculous. Well, how could I force you into taking a loan right now? That wouldn't even be wouldn't even be constitutional for that to happen. I'm not going to force you into taking out a business loan right now because I'm shutting you down. The comparison of these two things, they are so different, and yet people still make these comparisons all the time. And it deeply saddens me that some people think that this is a good comparison. In this case, I think Ed Krasenstein is actually being malicious. I think he's actually being partisan and biased. I don't think he's just an idiot, because he and his brother, they do post a lot of things. They do keep up with stuff. You know, they know what's going on. They're well aware of the way that the PPP loans are structured. They're well aware of how they are different. He's just trying to post something partisan. But there are some people who actually think that this is a good comparison. And I don't want to say that they're dumb, but it is dumb bleep number 10. So there you go. Get your votes in. Everyone get those votes in right now. We got 10 items for you to vote on at the moment. I am pumped to see what everyone comes up with. We got number one, Mike Johnson, FISA. Number two, background checks from the Biden administration. Number three, the 3D printed meat and bad genes. Yeah, you see what I did there? It's pretty good. Number four, voter suppression. Number five, James Clyburn. Number six, Jasmine Crockett with the, that was the black taxes. Technically, in that scenario, you would have white taxes, because you'd just be getting taxed because you're white. Whatever. Number seven, Maxine Waters. People don't say racist things, but they're racist because they say things. Number eight, Sheila Jackson Lee. The moon is in fact not made of cheese. It's made of gases. Number nine, Sunny Hostin and the eclipse and the earthquakes and the cicadas. Number 10, PPP versus student debt. And I can go ahead and call the votes right now. It's Sheila Jackson Lee, the moon. Sad day for America. That's how I feel. All right, that does it for Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network this Tuesday. We will see you again next Tuesday for another 3 hours. Have a great week.
Want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate? Well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor Mark Warda.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.